Masechet Shabbos on Daf Ayin Gimel, the Mishnah lists off all of the lamites of his malachas. The first 11 malachas that are listed in the Mishnah are referred to by the Gemara as Sidur de Pas, the Seder Hadvarim, the fashion of what one you plow the ground, you plant the ground, Chorish Zareya, until you bake a loaf of bread. So the 11th malacha is Ofer. The Gemara says that really, how do you establish which activities constitute an Issa Malacha on Shabbos? So the Gemara learns it out from Pesukim. In Chumash, whatever was important in the building of the Mishkan. Mishkan whatever was a significant activity in constructing the Mishkan is considered now Malacha. That's the Gemara, the first Daf in Bava Kama, the Beis HaMenal. So the Gemara says that really in the Mishkan, there was no Ofer. They had Mavashel. But the reason why the Mishnah lists Ofer as the malach, they had mamashal because they used to cook the some kind of vegetables that had a dye, that had a pigment in order to dye the curtains in the Beis HaMikdash, in order to dye the different ureas in the Mishkan. So it was really mamashal, it wasn't ofer, but the reason why the Mishnah lists ofer is because the Mishnah wants to make it easy for us to remember. The Mishnah lists off the first 11 malachas in order, as sidur de pas. There are 11 malachas that are necessary in baking a loaf of bread. There used to be a balabos in the Bronx who published, he used to daven in Rabbi Chalap's father's shul. He used to daven there too. So this balabos used to publish svarim. And a lot of times he didn't know what in the world he was talking about. So one of his svarim, he makes fun of all the rabbanim. He says, he doesn't understand, what are they so machmer about putting tea bags into burning hot water? What is it talk about bishul on tea bags? Who eats tea? Bishul means he's cooking food. Nobody's eating the tea over here. So that's really a mistake that the Balabas made. Most of what he wrote in his farm is also a mistake. But that was a major mistake because in the Mishkan, they didn't cook food. They cooked samamanim, the Gemara says. They cooked vegetables in order to eat them. These were in order to get the pigment of the dye. The Gemara says explicitly that the prohibition of Mabashal applies to tar. If a person has tar and heats it till it melts, or a person has wooden pegs, and heats them till they become soft. So the Gemara says beferish that the prohibition of bishul applies even to non-food items. You look in the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam writes that there are three different forms of bishul. One form is if you do bishul on food items, then you're in violation of bishul if you heated it till it became roi lachila, at least kemachal ben du rustoi. There was a gangster in the days of the Tanaim who was always running away from the police, and his name was ben du rustoi. So he was always afraid that they're going to catch him. So whenever he would broil his raw meat, so he would just broil it rare done. He wouldn't have enough time to broil it to make it well done because he wanted to gobble it down and run away to hide from the police. So that's called Michael Benderusoy. If you take meat or you take any raw food and you cook it, either shlish bishula or chatzi bishula, that's a machlekes Rashi in the Rambam, how much you have to cook it till some group of people would eat it the way it is. So if you cook food items till it reaches Michael Ben Derusoi, that's a violation of bishul. If you cook water, if you take water from the tap and you cook it, the water, you could drink the water when it's straight from the tap. So what do you mean by cooking it, you make it royal achila? So the Rambam says when you cook water, the shear bishul is, if you cook it till it reaches the point of Yatza Ledes go. Yatza Ledes is not the evaporation point. The evaporation is 212, 100 centigrade. Yatza Ledes Bo means like the Loshin in the Shach writes in the every day, like the Loshin in the Pasuk in Iyo. Nasal de Bechila mi Panecho, that I jump away in fear in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yatza Ledes means if a person is not prepared for it, and he puts his hand in a pot of a container of water, he thought it was going to be cold water. And then it turns out that it's hot water, so his instinctive reaction is, his reflex is going to be that he's going to jump his hand away. That's called Yatza Ledes Bo, the hand jumps away from the Yatza Ledes. People can take a shower in Yatza Ledes water. Yatza Ledes doesn't mean that it's scathing, that it's burning. That's called Yad Nichvez Bo. If you have water, if you leave your hand in it, you'll burn your skin off. Your skin will have a mark on it. Your skin will be red. That's called Yad Nichvez Bo. Yatza Ledes is lower than that. That's a question. How much is Yatza Ledes? The Rambam says that if you heat water, if you heat liquids till the degree of Yatza Ledes Bo, that's a violation of Bishul on Shabbos. Even though you're not making it Roi Lachila, it was Roi Lachila before. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa has a whole He quotes a whole essay where people made a whole study, and they came to the Chumrah that it's 114 degrees Fahrenheit. Had they come to 114? Because the Gemara in Chulin in the first perek has a machlokes amaroim. If I take a treifa knife and I shecht an animal with it, so will the treifa blia and the knife go into the neck of the animal? So the Gemara says it depends. If the neck of the animal is not yatzoledes, so then the treifa blia doesn't go. That's called tzainen. Anything lower than yatzoledes is called tzainen. And there's no blia b'tzainen unless you have something that's soaking for 24 hours. That's going to be a blia based on kavish k'melusha. Kavish at 24 hours. But if you just have a treifa knife, I take a treifa knife and I cut a piece of gefilte fish. And treifa knife doesn't have any treifa schmaltz on it, just that it has a treifa blia in the knife. So if I cut a piece of chicken or I cut a piece of fish, it doesn't make a treif if everything is tzayna. If it's hot, if the knife or the food or the both yatzal lettuce bowl, so then you have to be concerned. Maybe there'll be a blia. Maybe the blia will go out if it's chametz. So the Gemara has this machlokes. What if I have a treif, a knife, and I shecht an animal with it? Or I have a kosher knife and I shecht an animal, and the animal turns out to be a treifa. So does the knife become treif? So the Gemara says it depends whether the neck of the animal at the time of Shrita is yatzoledes or below yatzoledes. So it's a question in the Gemara. The Gemara finally comes to the conclusion that the base of Shrita, the neck of the animal, is tzoynen. It's below yatzoledes. So how hot is taka the neck of the animal at the time of Shrita? So somebody had nothing better to do, that he experimented. So the Gemara apparently holds that it's a borderline. Then the Gemara comes to the conclusion that the beis hashchita, the neck of the animal, is not yatzoledes, it's tzoynen. So what degree temperature is it taka when you shecht an animal? So they, in the research, they came out that when you shecht the geese, the neck is hotter than all other animals. The neck is hotter than cows, the neck is hotter than bulls, the neck of the geese, the goose, is hotter than chickens and turkeys and so on. And so how hot is it already? And the Gemara says, when you shecht all, the Gemara doesn't distinguish what you shecht. The Gemara says, when you shecht the neck of the animal, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that it's tzoynen. So they came to the, in this research, they came to the conclusion that the neck of the goose, when you shecht it, is 113 degrees Fahrenheit. And that the Gemara had a machloikis on. The Gemara decided that that's tzoynen. It just missed it. But maybe 114 degrees is going to be rasech. So that's where that chumrah comes from. That 114 degrees Fahrenheit is considered yatzoledes. Others consider that a big joke. 114 degrees Fahrenheit. The body temperature is 98 degrees. So you barely even, you hardly even feel it. You have to have something much more than that. Now, Soloveitchik used to think that yatzoledes, he thought it's somewhere between 140 and 160. And the kashrus organizations here in America, usually they're machmer from 120 up. But below 120, nobody considers it yatzoledes. So that's a question. Let's say I'll take water from the tap and put it on the fire in such a way, I'll put it on the radiator and it'll get hot and it'll get cooked on Shabbos. But every time I experiment, I see that it never gets past 119 degrees. Never gets 120 degrees. Even if you leave it till Havdalah, it's not going to become yatzoledes. So that's not an Issa Bishul. If you put water on top of a fire in a way, in a fashion that even if you leave it there, the whole Shabbos might become yatzoledes. So that's not a violation of Bishul. So again, the Rambam lists off that there are three forms of Bishul on the level of the Raisa. One is Bishul on food items that are not royal achila. If you have raw fish or raw meat, you have to cook it till Michael Ben Derusoy, till it's a rare done that gangster in the days of the Tanoim Ben Derusoy would be prepared to eat it. Or a group of people who eat food that's just barely cooked would eat it. Then there's bishul on liquids, on beverages, if you cook it till heat it till the point of yatzoledes bo. And then the Rama has the third type of bishul is on non-food items. If you heat something that's hard and by heating it becomes soft, or you heat something that's soft and by heating it becomes hard. So the Rambam says either one direction or the other, if the heat changed the consistency of the item and either made it hard, made it soft, the Rambam says that that's a violation of Bishul. This third section in the Rambam is problematic because the Gemara Masechus Shabbos on Daf Ayin Gimel, when the Mishnah lists off Oifen, the Gemara says that Oifen applies to tar and Oifen applies to the wooden pegs. So the Gemara seems to say only in one direction. If you take something that's hard and by heating it you make it soft. That, not that if you take something soft by heating it, you make it hard. So that's a questionable line in the Rambam. How did the Rambam get that idea? Where did the Rambam get that idea from that he says that two and bishul are non-food items? Either if you heat something till it becomes soft, or you heat something till it becomes hard. The Gemara only has the soft, not the hard.
I just want to know the bishul on liquid. If it's okay, if you cook it, so we ask questions. Is that a
deraisa or a deraisa? That's a deraisa. All three are deraisa. Bishul on food, bishul on liquids, and bishul on non-food items. The question is, where the Rambam describes bishul on food items, you take raw food, which is not roi lachila, normally raw, and then you cook it till the point of Michael Bender is soy. What if I take a food? What if I take tomatoes or I take carrots? In America, people eat raw carrots and they eat raw tomatoes. So let's say I'll cook the carrots till I'll make tzimtzis out of it. So according to the Rambam, there's no issur bishul. Rambam, that's what the commentaries on the Rambam discuss. The Rambam describes bishul, you take a food item which is not roi l'achila, and you cook it till you make it roi l'achila. There is such a concept in the Gemara with respect to the din of bishul akum. The Chachamim made an issur derabbanan. We're not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew, lest this may lead to intermarriage. So the Gemara says it's only going to lead to intermarriage if it's a choshev, a bishul, that the fellow did on our behalf. Let's say he took a food that's nechol kamoshu uchai. He took some carrots, or he took some apples, or he took some tomatoes, which we could have eaten without cooking them. And he cooked it, and now it's baked apples, and now it's cooked carrots. But we, in America, we could have just as well eaten the carrots raw. So the Gemara says, if the Nochri cooked the food, which is Nechel Kmo Shulchai, so it's not subject to Bishul Akum. So it's usually assumed that this is a special din, a local din only in Hilchas Bishul Akum, that the only time the Chacham prohibited the Bishul Akum is if the Bishul was really significant, that it enabled me to eat the food. If not for the Bishul that the Nochri did, we wouldn't have been able to eat the food. The Rambam sounds like he's assuming that this is the definition of Bishul even in Hilchas Shabbos. That if you cook a food that's roi l'achila without the bishul, then there's no iser bishul on that, no iser deraisa bishul. So that's a question that the commentaries on the Rambam work with. The Gemara says, based on commenting on a Mishnah in the third parak in Masechah Shabbos, that the prohibition of bishul is only violated if you minatora if you cook with eish or toldos eish. Either cook with fire, or let's say have a frying pan that I had on top of the fire, and it got burning hot, and then I took the frying pan off the fire, and I crack an egg open, and I leave the egg on the frying pan, and because the frying pan is so hot because of the fire, so the egg gets cooked, if such a thing would happen. So that's called, if I cook the egg on top of the fire, that's called bishul be'esh. If I cook the egg on the frying pan after removing the frying pan off of the fire, that's called bishul betoldos ha'esh. What about bishul bechama? So the Mishnah says that bishul bechama is mutam min hatorah, mutam min rabbanan. A person is in the Sahara Desert, and it's so hot, he cracks open, he has an Erev, and he goes out of his house, and he has a frying pan, and he cracks open an egg, and he just lets it sit there, and the sun is roasting away. The sun is so hot that it cooks the egg. So the Gemara said, that's mutam and atur, mutam and the Rabbana. They never prohibited that. What if you do bishul betolda sachama? What if I have a frying pan in the Sahara Desert, and it got so hot from the sun, then I took the frying pan back into the house? I crack open an egg, and the egg gets cooked because the frying pan is so burning hot. So min ha-Torah, that's certainly mutter. There's no iser bishul bechama, there's no iser bishul betolda sachama. With the Rabbanon, that's a machlokes ha-Tanoim in the Mishnah. So we pass from the halacha that even though bishul bechama is mutter min ha-Torah and with the Rabbanon, but bishul betolda sachama is also with the Rabbanon. Why? Because the Gemara explains you're going to have two frying pans. I have one frying pan was heated up on top of the fire, one frying pan was heated up in the sun. Then I'm going to take both frying pans inside to a different room. I have one next to the other. I crack open an egg on one, crack open an egg on the other. You look at the two frying pans, they're exactly the same. But the one that was heated up in the sun, that's mutam in atara, mutam in rabbanon to cook there. The other one is going to be an issa deraisa. The bishul told us aish. It's going to be an issa deraisa. So that's why we paskin that midirabbanon, they prohibited bishul told us achama. If you cook on a frying pan that was heated up from the sun, that's also midirabbanon.
So, but if the frying pan is currently in the sun, then it is mutter.
If the frying pan is in the sun and the sun is doing the cooking, then for sure it's mutter. What if the frying pan is in the sun? It's obvious that the frying pan became heated up by the sun, but the bishul is taking place because of the frying pan and not because of the sun. So that's a discussion in the Magen Avraham, in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. He quotes the Maharshal, who thinks that Bishul, the Toldos HaChama, is only awesome at the Rabbanon if you separated it from the Chama. But if the frying pan is still connected with the sun, even though I know that the sun is not doing the Bishul now, the metal of the frying pan is doing the Bishul. But if it's still in the sun, and it's obvious to all, the whole reason why they asked Bishul, the Toldos HaChama, is sort of because of a Marzayim. But if the Toldos HaChama, the frying pan, is still in the sun, then it would be mutter even with the Rabbanon. This is what the Marshal writes. And the Magen Avraham is not so convinced that we should accept that pool of the Marshal. That's a question. Today there's a common practice in Eretz Yisrael, everybody uses a Dud Shemesh. The water, they have a big water tank, and the water gets heated up by the solar heat. So Bishul Bechama is Mutta. Bishul Bechama is Mutta. So you can use a Dud Shemesh. Or maybe it's Bishul Betoldos Chama. You have to find out how the system works. Maybe it's called Bishul Bechama, Bishul Betoldos Chama. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he writes, based on a Rashi in Perikira, that the reason why Bishul Bechama is Mutta min HaTorah, and even Mutta min HaRabbanon, the reason why Toldos HaChama is only awesome with the Rabbanon, is Mutta min HaTorah, is because Rashi writes, Ein Derech Bishul Bechama. That's not the normal way to do Bishul. So Moshe writes that since today these are multi-billion dollar companies, they're making a fortune of money. Everybody's buying a Dud Shemesh in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody uses that. So obviously it became Darka Bekach today. So Moshe says, based on the Rashi, that today to do Bishul with a Dud Shemesh would be an Issa Deraisa. That's what Rav Soloveitchik also thought. That if the style of Bishul Bechama becomes normal, so based on that Rashi in Perikira, that should be an Issa Deraisa. So we've covered most of the area of Bishul Deraisa. We have to discuss three prohibitions which are midrabbanan, which are related to Bishul. One is known as Shehiyah, one is known as Hachazara, and the third one is known as Hatmana. So Shehiyah goes like this. The end of the first parak in Mishnayis, a Maseches Shabbos, the Mishnah records a Machlokes Bishama and Bishilo. Is it permissible to set up a system on Erev Shabbos whereby a Malacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos? I have a sprinkler system for my lawn, and watering the lawn is a malacha on Shabbos. So I'm not watering the lawn on Shabbos. I turned on the sprinkler system on Erev Shabbos. It's going to go for an hour or two. So I started the malacha on Erev Shabbos and it continues into Shabbos. Or if I have some raw material, raw cloth, and I want to dye it a certain color, so you're not permitted to put it in the dye on Shabbos. That's one of the 39 malachas tzoveya. So what if I put it in the vat of dye on Erev Shabbos? If I take it out before Lichtpension, take it out before Shabbos begins, it didn't sit there long enough. It has to sit there for a couple of hours, then it should absorb the dye. So if I put it in the vat of the dye on Erev Shabbos, and it sits there the whole Shabbos, the whole duration of Shabbos. So is that prohibited or not? So that's a machlokes Bishama and Bishilo. So Bishama's opinion is that you're not permitted to set up, the question in the Gemara, whether Bishama is an Issa Deraisa and Issa Deraisa, but we don't accept Bishama's opinion anyway. It's important to learn their opinions. The Gemara says that when you learn the opinions of Bishama, it's also fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, even though we know in advance that we don't paskin like their opinion. But it's not that relevant as far as we're concerned today. We don't paskin like Bishama. Bishama says you're not allowed to set up the system on Erev Shabbos, whereby a malacha begins Erev Shabbos, continues into Shabbos. And we paskin like Bishilo, that it is mutta. Just parenthetically, in a major parenthesis, it's a very important topic. They still say it's permissible to set up a system on Erev Shabbos where the Malacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos. What if I set up a Shabbos clock whereby the Malacha is going to begin in the middle of Shabbos? I have a Shabbos clock and the lights go out in the middle of Shabbos. Or the sprinkler system starts at 12 o'clock at night. Or some Malacha begins in the middle of Shabbos. Would they still say that that's also permissible or not? So this was a big machlokes when they first came out with Shabbos clocks. Many years ago, the early 1900s, I think, there was a big machlokes in Europe, whether Beis Hillel even permit that, or Beis Hillel only permitted if the Malacha began on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos. The overwhelming majority opinion at that time was, in Europe, this is a machlokes, the overwhelming majority was that it's permissible, so Zayiske Paskin, that it's mutas, so everybody started using all the Shabbos clocks. Rav Soloveitchik thought that the first people who used the Shabbos clocks in their homes were probably in violation of Marisayin. You're not allowed to do something that misleads the public into believing that you're doing a malacha. Years ago, when I was growing up, it was known that Orthodox Jews live in the dark because the Jews were not so wealthy. You couldn't leave the lights on all Shabbos long. There were no Shabbos clocks. It didn't exist at that time. Kodem Brias Olam, when I was a little child. So if a Jew had the lights on Shabbos, on Friday night, obviously he's going to turn them off. He's not going to leave it on the whole Shabbos. He can't afford to leave it on the whole Shabbos. So the way to identify whether a person was Orthodox or not, if it was dark in his home, you knew that he was Orthodox. If the lights were on, obviously he was not Orthodox, not going to be a Shem Shabbos. This is Rav Soloveitchik pointing out. This is just the reverse from the way it used to be in the days of the Gaonim. Days of the Gaonim, they were fighting with the Karoim. So the Karaites interpreted the Pasuk in Chumash L'Sivar Resh B'chol Mashvasechem B'yayim on Shabbos that you're not allowed to leave any fires on in your home on Shabbos. So the Karaites lived in the dark on Shabbos. They didn't allow any lights. And on Friday night, the food was hot because they had cooked it on their Shabbos. But on Shabbos morning, the food was always cold because they didn't allow any fires in the house. L'Sivar Resh. They didn't permit any fires in the house. So the food on Shabbos morning had to be cold. So at the time of the Gaonim, that's when they insisted, no, that you have to follow the tradition of the Gemara. Lo Sivaresh means to light a flame on Shabbos, or to throw in more fuel into the flame. But to leave a fire on for Merer Shabbos is perfectly permissible. And it would appear, perhaps, that the Brocha L'Hadlik Ner Shal Shabbos, the Brocha that we recite to Abba Hadlokas HaNeris, the earliest sources come from the days of the Gaonim. So that's what some historians claim, that the Gaonim were the ones who introduced the Brocha and Hadlokas HaNeris. In the Gemara, you don't find it. In Tosfos, there are two opinions. In the beginning of Bema Madlikin, whether you say a Brocha or not, on Hadlokas HaNeris. And then Tosfos quotes, the earliest source that we have is from the Gaonim. Tosfos quotes it from the Talmud Yerushalmi. We don't have it in Talmud Yerushalmi. So the commentaries on the Tosfos say that a lot of times Tosfos refers to something as Yerushalmi, means a source outside of Talmud Bavli. So they'll sometimes refer to Chuvas HaGoyim as Yerushalmi. This is not the Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Goyim were the ones who insisted that you have to say a Brocha on Hadlokas Neiris to demonstrate that the Karoim are wrong. Not only is it permissible, it's a mitzvah to light candles on Erev Shabbos. And that's the famous line that the Rabbi Mizrahi Alevi has in his commentary on Gemara on the Rif in Masechah Shabbos in the third parak in Perikira, that one who doesn't eat hot food on Shabbos morning, one who doesn't have hot shalom, one who doesn't drink hot soup or hot drink, tzorach b'dika achrav, you have to check to see, maybe he's an apikoros, maybe he belongs to the group of the karoim. So in the days of the gaonim, in the days of the karoim, if it was dark in the home, that would be a simon that the fellow is not orthodox, that he's from the karoim. If it would be light, it's a simon that he's orthodox. And when I was growing up, it was the reverse. That's what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. Years ago, in the early, until the Shabbos clocks became popular, till the middle of the 1900s, 1950, 60, I don't know. So when people started, so he thought that the first people who used Shabbos clocks were probably in violation of Maariv Zayin, because people probably thought that they're probably turning off the lights. It didn't occur to them that they have a Shabbos clock. And once it became popular, so then it became mutter. If there's no longer any Maariv Zayin, then it's mutter. So this was a big machlokes, whether the Shabbos clock is mutar or asur. Maybe Gesilu would agree to Beis Shammai if he set up a system on Erev Shabbos whereby the melacha is going to begin in the middle of Shabbos. So this is a machlokes, and the majority held that it was mutar, so it was nifsak that it was mutar. Then in Eretz Yisrael, that was in the early 1900s, then in Eretz Yisrael in the 1920s, 1930s, I think, one of the rabbanim published a manuscript of the Rambam on Masechet Shabbos. They have a manuscript of the Rambam, a commentary on Masechet Shabbos. Surprising, the Rambam wrote in Hebrew and he wrote in Arabic. The Pirush HaMishnayos was written in Arabic, and then Moreh Nebuchadnezzar was written in Arabic and translated, and the Mishnah Torah was written in Hebrew. This commentary on Masechet Shabbos, which was written by the Rambam, was written in Talmudic Hebrew, in Aramaic. Very unusual. So they only have this manuscript till the end of the first parak into the middle of the second parak. So on this mishnah, at the end of the first parak, the Rambam writes three times that even Beis Hillel, who permits you to set up a system on Erev Shabbos, that the melacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos, this is only if the melacha began on Erev Shabbos. But to set up a system that the melacha should begin in the middle of Shabbos, even Beis Hillel would agree that that's prohibited midirabban. And the Rambam says it's based on a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. That's why he interprets the Talmud Yerushalmi. So that's why some Rabbanim pointed out years later, even though this opinion was outvoted, originally when they had the Shaila on the Shabbos clocks, So the majority said that it's mutter, even though it was outvoted, but maybe we should reconsider the issue, maybe we should say l'chumer, because the Rambam says that it's us.
I'm just wondering, based on that fact that Shabbos is mutter today, based on that George is known that, are we concerned, what about the Goyim that never heard of Shabbos? Are we concerned with the Goyim that they might think that the Jews are violating their religion, or we're not concerned at all with the Goyim that the Jews say, as long as the Jews know, it's okay?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know. Somebody asked me this question. He lives in Yerushalayim, in an area where there's a lot of there's an awful lot of gnevus in people's apartments.
Because the Goyim, they don't know Shabbos and yes. They see the Jews light on Shabbos. I assume they would simply put it on the second floor, you know?
And the non-Jews know that Jews are not allowed to turn on the lights on Shabbos.
Yeah, sure. I hear. That's true.
No, this someone asked me this shayla. That in Eretz Yisrael, in certain areas, there's a high incidence of burglaries. So he wants to have his trisim, open to get fresh air. But then, when certain parts of the day, he wants to set his tris on a Shabbos clock that the tris should lock, so to prevent ganavim from coming. So the question is, will it be a marisai? So we have to find out how common is it that people put a tris on a Shabbos clock. I don't know. Got to find out. Anyway, so it's based on this Pirush HaRambam on Masechta Shabbos that some Rabbonim think we shouldn't be so easy to be makel on setting up Shabbos clocks. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, it has been accepted, it's mekubal leheterah, to set up a Shabbos clock to turn on the light on Shabbos. But he thinks that that's only with respect to putting on lights because that enhances both Shabbos. But let's say to set up a Shabbos clock to take, let's say there's a football game on TV, and I'll be heartbroken if I'm going to miss this football game, or there's some kind of a comedy, some kind of a movie on television, I'm going to miss it. So I have a VCR, I think, and I'll put it on the Shabbos clock that it should make a film of this movie. And it's in the basement, and no one's going to be there on Shabbos when it clicks, when it goes on, when it goes off, no one's going to hear the noise. Would that be mutter or not? So Rav Moshe Feinstein thought maybe we shouldn't allow it. Maybe the minig lehakel only is when it turns on lights on Shabbos, so that enhances kvod Shabbos. But if it's something that doesn't really enhance kvod Shabbos, maybe we should be machmer not to permit the Shabbos clock where malacha is going to begin in the middle of Shabbos. There was a Professor Lev who just passed away 2 years ago, the one who founded Machon Lev in Eretz Yisrael. He wasn't a Rav, he wasn't a Paisik, but he was a very knowledgeable, very learned fellow. And he did a lot of work on physics and halacha. He wrote a lot for the Encyclopedia Talmudit about Chashmal. This is not the final say, but he has what to say. So in one of the last book, I think, that he published before he passed away, also on physics and halacha, so he thought that there's room to be machmer, that let's say a person and Eretz Yisrael will call his parents in America on Matzoi Shabbos and leave a message on the machine that he had a wonderful Shabbos. So in America it's Shabbos, and there it's Matzoi Shabbos. So the person is doing an activity b'chol, he's talking into the telephone b'chol, or he's going to send a fax, let's say from Eretz Yisrael, it's going to get printed out in America. So he does a pool of b'chol, which causes a malacha to begin in the middle of Shabbos. Here it's in the middle of Shabbos, and the malacha begins here in the middle of Shabbos. He's causing, that's the question, what kind of a malacha is it? A malacha derais, a malacha derabbanan, to leave a message on an answering machine. Or let's say, to print out a fax that's a kosev. So if the fellow sends a fax from Eretz Yisrael, so he's doing ksiv in Eretz Yisrael, that's not a problem. That's the ksiv on the piece of paper that he did there. But then when the paper prints out in New York, so then he's causing ksiv to occur in the middle of Shabbos. So Professor Lev thought that maybe one should be machmer on this, along the lines of this Rambam. So again, so the Mishnah has this machlekes bisham and bisilu. Are you permitted to set up a sprinkler system where the malacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos, or to put some cloth into a vat of dye that it should start absorbing the dye on Erev Shabbos and should continue into Shabbos? And we pask in muta. We pask like bisilu that's permissible. If the malacha began on Erev Shabbos, continues into Shabbos is muta. The one exception to the rule, but Bisilul agreed that you're not allowed to, is Bishul. I'm going to put raw food on the fire on Erev Shabbos, and it's going to get cooked into Shabbos. So that's forbidden midirabbanon. Why? The person may be nervous on Friday night, he's going to come, let's say the husband is davening in shul and the wife is nervous, husband's going to come home and the food is not going to be ready, so she may start. The days of the Tanaim, they didn't have a stove with a knob to regulate the heat. They had coals, a furnace with coals in it, and so we're afraid that the wife may start stirring around, poking the coals. Shema yechata digachol. What malacha, what's violated if a person pokes around in the coals? So the Gemara says increases that hachoyte digacholim, if you just have coals and you poke around in the coals, so some of the coals were orange on top, they had a flame on them, and the coals on the bottom are probably black. So if you poke around and you cause a black coal to become orange, that's mavir, you caused havara. And some of the coals that were orange, that were on flame, and you'll now push them and they'll be on the bottom and now they'll become black, that's called mechaber. So the Gemara says, achoyte digacholim on Shabbos b'shoigig is chayv shtei chatois, because he violated two malachas. He violated mechaber u'mavir. If you poke around in coals that are under food and you hasten the cooking process, so the Gemara says that's a third malacha of bishul. Even though if you would leave the food by itself, it's going to get cooked in an hour and a half. And because you fool around, because you poke around in the coals, it's only going to take an hour instead of an hour and a half. So the Gemara says the kruvi bishul is also a malacha of bishul. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the earlier Achrayim, I'm not sure whether this din ikruve bishul is also a violation of bishul menatar. Does that only apply to bishul? What about other malachas? Let's say I have dye, I have some cloth, some raw material is sitting in a vat of dye. If I leave it the way it is, it'll take 12 hours in order to absorb the dye. And I put in a chemical or I do something, whatever. I stir it up, so because I stirred it, it's going to absorb the dye in less time. Or some other malacha like that. An animal is dying anyway, and I hasten the death of the animal. So whenever you hasten any malacha that already began, and you do something to hasten the malacha, do you say that that too is a malacha? Or maybe it's only by bishul. The Gemara says it could be bishul is also, maybe you should divide the malacha. Maybe some are like bishul, some are not like bishul. The Mishnah Berurah writes, they're not sure how many malachas fall under this category. But al-Kalpanim, that's what the Gemara says, that you're not allowed to do shahir, you're not allowed to leave raw food on the fire on the Erev Shabbos, that you should cook into Shabbos, because that's the one case where the Beisila Levita Beishamai, that you're not allowed to set up a system on Erev Shabbos, and the Malacha should begin on Erev Shabbos and continue into Shabbos, because of the Chashash, Zer Hashem Yechat Abigachol. So, is it ever permissible? So then the Gemara, the Mishnah says, yes, if Goraf or Kotam, if Gorach means the growth is Gechola, means if I push all the coals to a different location. Normally I have the meat that I'm broiling is directly on top of the coals, so if I'll take a shovel, I'll push all the coals to the back of the oven, and the meat will be in the front of the oven, so that's already not usual, that's not normal. So I have a hecker over here. Or if Kotam, Kitmo is ashes, so if I sprinkle ashes on top of all of the coals, normally you don't put ashes on the coals. It cools off the coals a little bit. Normally you put the raw steak on the coal that it should get broiled. So if you put ashes on top of the coals and then you put the meat on top of it, so then since you have a Dovah HaMapsik, so that'll remind you not to fool around, not to poke into the coals. So we need some kind of a hecker. If you have a Shinoi, if you have a hecker, so then it reminds you not to fool around with the coal. So then we're not afraid that the person will be mechatav b'gacholim. So then it's mutar. So that's what usually people assume. If you have a blech is the German word for a piece of tin. So if you have a piece of tin and it separates in between the pot that you have the food in and the fire, so that's not normal. So that will remind us not to poke around in the coals. Moshe Feinstein writes in his Chuvis, in the first volume of the Igros Moshe, he recommends that a person should really have a blech that not only covers the burners, but that covers the knobs in the front as well. But the question is, if you can't have both, if you only have the possibility of covering the knobs or covering the burners, so which is more important? So Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that more important is covering the burners. Because in the days of the Gemara, the Gzer was Shem Yichad to be Gemara. But today, the way to fool around with the flame is by handling the knobs. So Moshe says he thinks that covering the knobs is lechumra, but Mikra Din, the Din really requires you have to cover the flames. And there were those who disagree with Rav Moshe. Soloveitchik and Rabbi Aaron Kotler disagreed. Rabbi Shimon and I did a sefer on Hilchos Shabbos. He quotes it. Rabbi Aaron Kotler disagreed. He thought the main thing is if you cover over the knobs in the front, strictly speaking, even if you don't cover up the flames, that would also be considered group of tumah. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah and the third Perek in Shabbos.
Soloveitchik also said that?
Yeah.
Also held that it was the knobs that are most important?
He thought the knobs was more important. If you cover the knobs, even if you didn't cover the fire, that would be mutter. We'll soon get to it.
That's not going to help for Hachzorah?
Right. That won't help for Hachzorah and it won't help for Hatmana. Hold your breath. We got to continue. That'll solve the problem of Shehiyah. But it may not solve Hatmana and it won't solve Hachzorah. Yeah. So in the opening Mishnah, the Gemara has a machlokes hatanoim. Is it ever permissible to leave food on the fire on Erev Shabbos without any blood? So one opinion in the Tanoim is that if the food is already in his basha, Klamaychel ben de Rusoi, even though many people don't enjoy eating food that's only half cooked, many people would insist after they want it well done. But since the food is ready roi l'achila from before Shabbos, so then some of the Tanoim are of the opinion that you don't need a blech for that. And the other Tanoim disagree. And they say, no, you need a blech even if the food is higiyah l'machal ben derusoi. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote, there's a machlokes harishonim, how are you supposed to paskin on this? The question, how to read the Gemara? They're in the first daf in Perikira. So there's a machlokes, what the din is. How would we paskin? So the Rebbe Akiva Eger, on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, quotes a passage from the Rashba on the first daf in Perikira. That according to the Tanoim, that you're not permitted to leave food on the fire, even if it is a Yigiyah L'machal ben derusoi. You're not allowed to leave us such food on the fire unless you put a blech. So there's room to argue the point and say, if you put a blech, it's permissible to leave food on the fire, only if it was ready Yigiyah L'machal ben derusoi from before Shabbos. What if I put raw food on top of the fire? So the Rashba is mistapek, that there's a possibility to say that the blech won't even help. The blech only helps if the food is already partially cooked. But to put raw food on top of the fire, even with a blech, it won't help. Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes this possibility from the Rashba. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions, whether we paskin like the first Tana, like the second Tana. So Rabbi Akiva Eger is recommending that you should never rely on a blech to leave food on top of the fire, unless the food was at least partially cooked. That's why in Europe there used to be two practices regarding putting on a kettle of water. So in Lithuania, the practice would be that a woman, before she would bench lift, would fill up a kettle of water and put it, cold water, and put the blech on Erev Shabbos, put the kettle on and bench lift. And she wasn't worried about the seeing to it that the water should be cooked before Shabbos. So she would put on cold water. And it would begin to cook in the middle of Shabbos. They were make a legamre, that if you have a blech, you can even put totally raw food. And in Galicia, the practice was, my mother's family was born in America, but her parents were from Galicia, so their practice was that they wouldn't put the cold water on the blech before the chbench. They would cook up a whole pot full of soup and a whole pot full of water on Erev Shabbos. And then the blech is good if the food is ready, at least partially cooked. The food is partially cooked, the water is fully cooked. But if you're going to put raw, cold water on the fire on Erev Shabbos, even with a blech, it doesn't help. That was the bichoshish for this Rashba that was quoted by Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Soloveitchik told over the story in class that on one occasion a young couple was holding by getting divorced. So they came to him, and the husband is complaining that his wife, her father was a very prominent Orthodox rabbi, a European rabbi from Lithuania. And so the husband is complaining, his wife is Michal Shabbos, he's going to get divorced, his wife is Michal Shabbos. So then she asks, what does she do? This was the whole point of a dispute, that she would put a kettle of cold water on the fire right before she would bench lift. And he, by his mother, she never did that. She always cooked up the water from before. Rabbi Soloveitchik asked the boy, where do your parents come from? So he said, they came from Galicia. He asked the girl, he knew the girl's parents. The girl's father was a very prominent rabbi. So he asked the girl, where do your parents come from? So she said, parents come from Lithuania. So he said, each one is following the family tradition. The Nishke Michal Shabbos, it's okay. Maybe she should follow the husband's practice, but it's not the reason to get divorced, not to get so excited. She was following her family tradition. Okay, So that's part of the story of Shehiyah. To leave food on top of the fire on Erev Shabbos, you have to have a blech. You can't leave food on the fire without a blech. And even with a blech, Rabbi Akiva quotes a possibility from the Rashba that we only permit leaving food with a blech if the food is at least a gil l'machal ben derusoy, or if the water is already fully cooked before. What if you have food that was fully cooked already, it's in the refrigerator, you want to take it out, I have kugel, I have chicken, I have all kinds of foods that were cooked already, and I want to put them back on top of the fire. So min ha-Torah, there is a rule that ein bishol ha-bishol. The food is ready, roi l'achila. So if I put it back on top of the fire, you're not in violation of an isa bishol. What about on soup? Do you say ein bishol ha-bishol on soup? So that's two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. What's the question? Maybe since the shear bishol by lach, by liquids, is when you make it hot, yatzo letesbo, so let's say I'll take water, and I'll heat up water, and it'll become burning hot, yatzo letes, then I'll cool it down, and I put it in the refrigerator. Then I put back on top of the fire. So when I put it back on top of the fire, if I have raw chicken, and I cook it, and I put it in the refrigerator, then I put it back on top of the fire, you're warming up the raw chicken, you're heating it up again, but the chicken is ready edible. If I have a raw kugel, which I cooked, I baked in the oven, so now the kugel is cooked and it's edible, so strictly speaking, you can eat it straight out of the refrigerator also. It tastes better when you warm it up. The same thing soup. You can drink cold soup also. But water, if you cook water, you put it in the refrigerator, then you take it out. It's like cold water taking it out from the tap. So the pashtus is that if you take plain water and you heat it up till yatza lettuce, then you cool it down, then you heat it up again, everyone should agree that should be yesh bishol ha-bishol. That's what the Egli Tal writes in his sefer.
Isn't there an issue with soup? Or is that, like, don't people get, like, well, like, if you put the soup in the refrigerator Friday night, people don't reheat it usually?
Right, so soup is a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, whether you say yesh bishol ha-bishol or ein bishol ha-bishol. What's the question? If you take water and you put it in the if you cook water and you put it in the refrigerator, then you put it back on top of the fire, it's like cooking it anew. Nothing is left from before. I mean, maybe you killed all the germs from before. But the whole idea of bishul by water is that you heat it up till the point of yatza letes. So if it cooled down to room temperature and then you heat it up again, there everyone should agree that yesh bishul ha-bishul in water. In soup, you start off with cold water and raw vegetables, raw chicken, whatever. Then when you cook it, it turns into a soup. Then when you put it into the refrigerator, it doesn't revert back to become raw vegetables and raw chicken. It doesn't return back to its original state. It's cold now. So if you reheat it, it's really roi l'achila when you take it out of the refrigerator. It's also roi l'achila. It tastes much better if you eat the soup when it's hot. But strictly speaking, it's roi l'achila the way it is too. So that's why by soup, there's a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. So how do we paskin by this? So let's see. So on chicken and on kugel, on macholim, for sure the din is ein bishol ha-bishol, min ha-Torah, there's no prohibition. So if you'll take cooked chicken or cooked kugel or other foods, you put them in front of the refrigerator, put it back on top of the fire, so min ha-Torah, there's no prohibition. So the Mishnah says that even though it's mutam min ha-Torah, but the Rabbanon, they prohibited this, that's called ha-chazor. To put something back on top of the fire is forbidden mid Rabbanon. Why did they prohibit it in the Rabbanon? So this is a fundamental machlekes. So Rishayim, it's not clear in the Gemara why it's also. So the Chachmei Svara, the Rambam and the Rif and all the other, the Ramban, all the Chachmei Svara were of the opinion that HaChazorah is also in the Rabbanon because Yesh Bishol HaBishol in the Rabbanon. Even though I'm in HaTorah and Bishol HaBishol, but in the Rabbanon, Yesh Bishol HaBishol, it's an Isra Bishol in the Rabbanon. And the Taisus opinion is not so. Taisus has on the beginning of Perikir in a few places, Taisus repeats this recurrent theme that the prohibition of HaChazorah to reheat food on Shabbos is not because of Bishol Midirabbana, but rather Shemi Yechata B'Gecholim. The same reason why they prohibited Shehiyah to leave food on top of the fire, Shemi Yechata B'Gecholim, so for the same reason they prohibited HaChazorah to take the chicken that's fully cooked from the refrigerator and put it back on top of the fire. You look in the Ramah paskin like Taisus. Aloha Lamaisa, the Ramah paskin like Taisus. For Ashkenazim, okay. Svardin maybe don't follow the Taisus, maybe Svardin follow the Ramah, I don't know. But the Ashkenazim follow the Ramah, so the Ramah writes Aloha Lamaisa like Taisus. So therefore, let's say some of the students in the dormitory buy cooked chicken and cooked kugel and they leave it in their refrigerators. in the dorm rooms, and then on Shabbos in the winter time they'll take it out and put it on top of the radiator. So the radiator is burning hot. But it's not Shach Shem Yichat to be Gecholim over here. It's not when you put the food from the refrigerator on top of the radiator, it can get piping hot. But you're not putting it on Gabi Ho'esh. So the prohibition of the whatever is awesome in the Rabbanim, because Gezeres Shem Yichat to be Gecholim, so that prohibition only applies if you're putting the food al Gabi Ho'esh. If you're not putting the food al Gabi Ho'esh, let's say I'll take chicken out of the refrigerator and I put it on the enamel on the side of the burners. The burners are over here. You have the enamel on the right and on the left, and I'll leave the food on the side. Lismoch. So in Shulchan Aruch it says that's mutter. To do hachazar b'samoch is mutter. Because they only prohibited hachazar if you do hachazar agabi hoesh. According to those Rishonim who hold, according to the Rif and the Ramam and the Chachmei Sfarad, who hold that hachazar is asur because of bishul, yesh bishul habishim and the Rabbanon, so this would be bishul be'esh, or sometimes bishul betoldus eish. You're leaving it right next to the fire. So it's bishul be'esh. But because we don't accept that opinion, we don't paskin like that. We paskin that the isra of hachazara, the ramah, paskin's fashkinazim, that the prohibition of hachazara to reheat food on Shabbos is not because of bishul mederabbanan, but rather because of shema yichata b'gacholim. So the gzera was only instituted if the person puts the food back on top of the fire. So the only time we would permit hachazara on Shabbos is, let's say you have a kettle of water, so you pour a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and you want to put the kettle back on top of the fire. So we permit that. That's a Mishnah, that hachazar machlek is b'silim b'shamay. We paskin like b'silim, that hachazara is mutter on Shabbos. So hachazara is only mutter if you have several conditions fulfilled. So first of all, you have to have a blech. You have to have the fire covered up, roof of tun. Secondly, it has to be yod biyod, you have to be still holding on to the kettle of water. Third, it has to be daita lahachzir. I plan to, if I took the pot of soup off of the fire with the intention of leaving it off of the fire, I didn't intend to put it back on. Then someone screams, hey, we need it back on, so then you're not allowed to put it back on. It has to be yod biyod with daita lahachzir. Then we require dafke, you're only permitted to do hachzar al gabi hoesh, to put it back on top of the stove. Let's say I took out some chicken from the oven and I want to serve, let's say in a hotel or in a home. Some people are ready to eat the chicken, others are not. So I'll take out the big tray of chicken, I'll start serving some of the people, hold on to the tray. And then after I serve the half of the people who are ready for the chicken, I'll put the chicken back into the oven. And when the others are ready, I'll take it out again. So that says in the Gemara, Hachzor is not allowed, El Toch HaTanur. It's only allowed Agabi HaTanur, on top of the fire. It's not allowed inside. Once you took it out of the box of the inside of the oven, you can be machzor it back on top of the blech, on top of the fire, on top of the stove. But you can't be machzor anything el tocha oven. And then the fifth condition to permit the hachazara is that the food should be loy mitztana legamer. We shouldn't have cooled down completely. If the food cooled down to room temperature, then you're not allowed to. Then you're not allowed to put it back on top of the fire. Yeah. That's a question. This condition of loy nitztana legamer, the food didn't cool down completely, what is that based on? So the Mogen Avraham understands that this condition applies even if you're dealing with chicken. Let's say I took out the chicken from inside the oven and half of the guests are ready in the hotel, so I start serving the chicken. The other half of the guests are not ready for the chicken, so I'm not allowed to put the chicken back inside the oven, but I can put it back on top of a blech, on top of the stove, fine. So the question is, but what if I was standing and I was holding the chicken for so long that it cooled down to room temperature already? So is it mutter to put it back? So the Mogen Avraham says no. That's what it says in the Ramah, that I'm only permitted to put the food back on top of the blech, on top of the stove, if it's loy nitztana legamer, if it didn't cool down to room temperature. Once it cooled down to room temperature, that's like an asina mechadosh. We only allow hachazara to return something back on top of the fire. If it was on the fire from before, and I'm putting it back on top of the fire now. So if it's nitztana legamer, went down to room temperature, my putting it back is not a hemsha from what I did before. The Mishnah Brura points out that the Vilna Goyim did not understand like the Mogen Avraham. He understood that loy nitztana legamer is only in condition in lach. If you have soup or you have a kettle of water, so there was a machlokes quoted in Shulchan Aruch whether we say yesh bishlach habishul v'dov alach or not. So the Ramah made a compromise in the Machlokes HaRishonim, and he says if Nitzan and Legamre, if the soup went down to room temperature, cooled down completely to room temperature, then we'll consider it a Bishol Mechadosh if you put it back on top of the fire. But if it didn't cool down to room temperature, so then we say, yeah, ain't Bishol HaBishol by soup. So that's what the Vilna Gaon learns, that's what this condition in the Ramah is over here. Ramah says you have five conditions when we permit Hachazar to put the food back on top of the blech. That's only if it's soup or a kettle of water and the water is still above room temperature, lo nitzan legam. But if it's a dove yavesh, if it's, let's say, kugel or it's a chicken, even if it's nitzan legamre, you would be permitted, according to the Vilna Gaon, if it's doide biyod, v'dayta lahachzir, and it's agabi ho'esh, not al toch hatanur, and you have grufa ktuma, you have the other four conditions, so there wouldn't be a requirement for a fifth condition that it should be lo nitzan legam. Lo nitzan legam is only a condition if you're dealing with a dove lach, not if you're dealing with a dove gush. The Shulchan Aruch has two opinions regarding hachazara. So let's say if you have food in the refrigerator. So if you have food in the refrigerator, that's, you can't take it out of the refrigerator and put it back on top of the fire. That's not oida biyoda. We only permit hachazara if the food is still oida biyoda, v'dayta lahachzer, and so on. Once it's in the refrigerator, it's no longer oida biyoda. So you're not allowed to put it back on. So the Ramah writes, the Ramah lived in city Krakow in the middle of the 1500s. So he writes that the Balabatim have a practice, they rely on those Rishonim who say, the Ramban and the Ran quote a line from the Talmud Yerushalmi, they rely on those Rishonim who say that if the food was on top of the fire at the beginning of Shabbos, then you're permitted to put it back on top of the blech on Shabbos, even though it's Tana Legamri, even though it's no longer Oy Devi Oda. So when do you need all these requirements? So when is the requirement like this? So a funny case. There was food on the fire on Erev Shabbos, and the Balabasta takes off a pot of chicken or a kettle of water with her left hand, and then she goes to bench lift with her right hand. You only have two hands. Normal people only have two hands. So she goes to light the candles with her right hand. So then there's a question, is she allowed to put the food back on top of the fire? It wasn't on the fire at the beginning of Shabbos. When she bench lift, it wasn't on the fire. So then you need all the conditions. But if the food was on the blech in the beginning of Shabbos, even if it was taken off and put into the refrigerator, so the practice was that they would put it back on top of the fire. So the Ramah quotes this practice, and he says it's based on the Ran and the Ramban, and they quote a Yerushalmi like that, and he's opposed to this. He thinks that it's not right to use this kula. What's so bad about the kula? If the Talmud Yerushalmi has a kula, what's so terrible about it? The answer is, if you look at our Yerushalmi, it doesn't exist. Well, every word that they quoted appears, but it's a run-on paragraph, not even a run-on sentence, it's a run-on paragraph. They had the last two words from one paragraph, then they had a caption, a tzitut from the Mishnah, then they have the beginning of the next paragraph. So in our editions, this whole sentence doesn't exist. This whole sentence is a combination of two different paragraphs in a piska from the Mishnah. So that's what the commentaries on the bottom of the page point out. How come the Rambam didn't quote this Yerushalmi? The Rambam always quotes Yerushalmi, say the Rambam must have had the gear, so the way we have, that Yerushalmi doesn't exist. So the Rambam recommends that one should not rely on this kula. Apparently it wasn't only in Krakow where the Rambam lived that many Balabatim had this kula. There were other parts of Europe as well where they followed this kula. So Ramosha Feinstein writes in his Sefer that even though there were many communities where they followed it, but he says the Ramah recommends you shouldn't follow this kula. The Pashta says that it's based on a misprint. In the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kar and the Mechaber quotes the Machlokes, what if you take out food that was fully cooked before Shabbos, let's say chicken, kugel or something, cholin, something that's fully cooked and there's no Issa Bishol HaBishol, there's no Issa Bishol. Just an issue of hachazara. Hachazara is only asur if you're putting al gabi hoish, if you put it on top of a radiator and the fire is in the basement somewhere by the boiler, but over here there is no fire. You have burning hot steam in the radiator, but you don't have the source of the heat, you don't have the fire here. So to reheat food from the refrigerator, put it on top of a radiator, that's mutta. That's hachazara shal al gabi hoish, that's mutta. So the Shulchan Aruch has a machloikas. What if I have a fire and then I have a pot of soup on top of the fire, And then I take another pot out of the refrigerator and I put that pot on top of this pot. I have a kedera al gabi kedera. So do you have the right to declare that the food in the bottom kedera is al gabi hoesh, but the food in the upper kedera, since you have a kedera that's mafsik in between, so the food in the upper kedera is not al gabi hoesh. So these are two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, and then the accepted opinion is lahakel, that when you have kedera al gabi kedera, there's not an iser of hachazorah on Shabbos, because the upper kedera is not considered agabi hoesh. So that's what they do in all the cafeterias and all the restaurants. How do they reheat vegetables? So they have such a system where they have water that has a fire on the bottom. So you have the water is burning out, and then they take out fully cooked vegetables from the refrigerator. They put it into a pan that's called a double boiler. They put all the goyish restaurants have it also to reheat. It wasn't invented for the purpose of Shabbos. The goyim use it. So when you want to reheat vegetables, so you have the water is in the bottom container that has a fire on the bottom, and then you take the vegetables and you put them in a separate container on top of the container with the water. So that's a gedera al gabi gedera. So the Shulchan Aruch says that that's permissible.
Is this also doesn't apply if the lower pot in one direction on the fire is empty?
So that's a question. Does it apply even if the lower pot is empty? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Prima Gadim who says no. If you don't have any food in the bottom pot, so the bottom pot is just another blech. So it doesn't make it's not a better heter if you have two blechs instead of one blech. Or the bottom pot is a blech in a curved shape. So the Prima Gadim writes, Rav Soloveitchik said this over when he learned Hilchos Shabbos. He said two blech is not better than one blech, and a crooked blech is not better than a straight blech. That's verbatim from the Prima Gadim quoted by the Mishnah Berurah. Just because the bottom pot is like this, that's not called kedera gabi kedera. You have to have food in the bottom pot. If it's empty, so the bottom pot is another blech, so two blechs is not better than one.
Is the logic of this process that it's not really heated from the fire, but the moisture is hitting it? Is that for the evaporation? Is that really the logic behind why it would be permissible?
No, the logic is that the prohibition of hachazore is shema yechate. So they only prohibit it if you put the food al gabi hoesh.
Okay.
So the bottom pot is considered al gabi hoesh. The upper pot, since the bottom pot has food in it, and the upper pot is not directly al gabi hoesh, so that's called shalo al gabi hoesh. If you do what?
It has to be two separate.
You can have them touching. Yeah, they are touching. Yeah, you have the upper kedera on top of the lower kedera. But you have to have food, and that's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Prima Gadim.
Like the Kedera Blech.
So that's why they invented now the Kedera Blech, that they have a blech.
A cooking pan.
That can contain, they claim, 11 cups of water. And then they put a lid on top of that. So since yet nobody drinks the water, but when you have the double boiler, nobody drinks the water in the double boiler either. So that's, strictly speaking, that's what the many assume, that that's has the heter of Kedera Agabi Kedera. Since you have water in the bottom container, so if you take out a dovar gush from the refrigerator and you reheat it on top of the kedera blech, that would be considered a kedera agabi kedera. If you're going to take soup from the refrigerator and reheat it, so that way machmer that by a dovar lach, there's bishulach abishul deraisa, so then it doesn't help that you have a kedera agabi kedera. Kedera agabi kedera takes off the yisa derabonon of hachazara, but it doesn't take off the yisa deraisa abishul. So whenever you have a heter to do hachzara, it'll only be mutter in a situation when there's no problem of bishol deraisa, when there's no bishol ahabishol.
If the blech takes off shem yechata of shir, why does it also take off the shem yechata?
That's a very good kasha. The Rabbi Natam in the Sefer HaYosha asks that kasha. Rabbi Natam is the one who says, in disagreement with the Rif and the Rambam and the Chachmei Misvarad, they hold that hachzara is an isa bishol midirabbanan. So if you just have a blach, it doesn't take off bishul. But the Rabbeinu Tam claims that the isur of hachazara is shem yichata, and the isur shiyah shem yichata. So how come if you have a blach, it takes off the isur shiyah? And if you have a blach, it doesn't take off the isur hachazara, you have to have another four conditions. What do you need so many conditions? Just have a blach on farting. So the Mishnah Berurah and the Oros HaMeach both refer you to this Rabbeinu Tam in the Sefer HaYosha that he answers it. Mishnah Berurah just says, look in the Sefer HaYosha, he answers. The Yerushalmi is kind enough to quote the two lines from the Sefer HaYosha. We have the Sefer HaYosha, it's not a secret. So the Rabbeinu Tam writes in the Sefer HaYosha that in Shehiyah, where you're leaving the food on top of the lech on Erev Shabbos, so you've regulated the fire in such a way that you see it's going to be the right degree temperature. So since you have a blech and you set it up on Erev Shabbos, you're not afraid Shem Yechata Migacholam on Leil Shabbos, into Shabbos. But if you're going to do HaChazara, maybe he set the fire at too high or too low a temperature. So he's going to take out the food from the refrigerator on Shabbos and put it on top of the blech, and the blech is going to remind him, but since he's putting the food in the middle of Shabbos, it may turn out the fire is too high, the fire is too low. So the blech is only going to help a little bit to remind him, but you need more things to remind you. You need to be other, etc. The blech solves the whole problem by Shehiyah, because you set up the system on Erev Shabbos with the blech, and you see that it's the right temperature. But if you plan to do Achzar on Shabbos, so then you need more than a blech, even though it's the same concern. The whole concern is Shem Yichata Migacholam. So again, so we are makel that HaChazar is only prohibited if you do HaChazar Agabi Hoesh. If you don't do HaChazar Agabi Hoesh, then it's mutar. So Chacham Avadya has a tshuva where he quotes all the Sfardish Poskim from the last 75 years. They all say the same thing, that whenever you have a blech, that's not normal to cook all week long, which Meshugana cooks food in a pot on top of a blech, on top of the stove. So whenever you have a blech, it's already Shalei Al Gabi Hoesh. You don't even need that it should be a bottom pot, that it should be empty. You don't even need a pot, just have a blech. It's already called Shalei Al Gabi Hoesh. This kula that Chacham Avadya recommends, and many Sfardim follow this kula has never been accepted by the Ashkenaz, and we consider that Al Gabi Hoesh. Even though you have a blech, that's called Al Gabi Hoesh, it's only called Shalei Al Gabi Hoesh. If you have a pot with food in it, so the bottom pot is Agabi Hoesh, the upper pot, the Gedera Agabi Gedera, is not called Agabi Hoesh.
And you don't need to eat that food. That food does not need to be edible, right?
Right, does not have to be. Well, doesn't have to be edible. Maybe it has to be edible. We have this system with the double boiler. The water, you can drink the water if you want. Nobody drinks it. We have kettles, we have samovars. We don't drink that water in the double boiler. But as long as it's Roy L'Achila, so we assume... Yeah, we assume that that's called Kedera Agavi Kedera.
It couldn't be tar? It wouldn't be okay to have tar?
I don't know. It's not discussed in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a good question. I don't know. But the common practice is that we make, well, even though the pot on the bottom has water which we don't plan to drink. That's exactly the heter that all the caterers have that. That's the heter of the double boiler. Every cafeteria, every hotel has like that, a double boiler. So let's say if a person violated the din of HaChazar, a person took food out of the refrigerator and put it back on top of the fire, and he violated the Issa, the Rabbanon of HaChazar, and the food is now hot. So the Gemara says that there's a penalty with the Rabbanon that you're not allowed to eat the food because somebody violated the Issa HaChazar. You have to wait till after Shabbos is over. But what happens if someone took food out of the refrigerator and they put it on top of a blech? So there are some who say that this is permissible. The Sfardim who follow Chacham Avadya, they say that it's permissible. That's not called Agabi Hoesh. Or let's say you had food that was on top of the blech at the beginning of Shabbos, and then it was put into the refrigerator. Then you put it back in the middle of Shabbos. So the Rambam recommends you shouldn't use that heter. And we today, most people don't use the heter because we assume that it's a misprint in the Yerushalmi. The Rishonim had a mistake in the Yerushalmi. But the Rambam writes that was a common practice. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Prima Godim, that the only time you have a penalty, that you're not allowed to be nenem in Melech HaShabbos, you're not allowed to eat food that was cooked or heated, the Isser on Shabbos, is only if the heating of the food was done be'oifen shalisa l'chol ha'deis. But if it's a machloikis ha'poskin, whether something was asr ha'mutter, even though the accepted opinion is that it's asr, but you can say that there's a penalty over here, since there is an existing opinion that this is mutter, a legitimate, you can't say Chacham Avadya doesn't count. We don't follow his opinion over here. But he's entitled to his opinion. Or the others who follow that other sheet of the Ramban and the Ran, a lot of Rishonim had such a line in the Yerushalmi. They said that it's mutter to put food back on top of the blech on Shabbos. If it was on the blech in the beginning of Shabbos, then you're allowed to put it back on Shabbos. And there are those who say it's even mutter by soup, even though the accepted opinion by soup is that it's bishul achabishul. It's a problem of bishul deraisa, but in the Shulchan Aruch they quote, there were those who held that by soup. There's ain't bishul achabishul. There's no Issa Bishul. And then if it was on the fire at the beginning of Shabbos, there's no Issa Chazar either. So Mishnah Berurah quotes the Prima Godim, whenever something is a machlokes, even though the accepted opinion is le'iser, but you can't say that there's a knas mid'rabbanan. You can't say that there's a penalty. The penalty is only if it's l'chol adeis asa.
So if someone served the soup, they would be able to eat the soup.
If someone serves it, you're allowed to eat it. Yeah. If the balabatim, if I'm visiting by someone else, so if the svardim and they follow chacham avadis, I don't have to give them usa. If the Ashkenazim, so I should tell them that that's not the accepted opinion by Ashkenazim. If the people who listen, if they'll be interested in listening, so I should tell them the soup is muta b'yeved, but next time you should do like that. Unless they're not interested in listening, so you don't give them any tochach. The Shari Tshuva, printed next to the Behetev in the regular Shulchan Aruch, quotes a Tshuva from the Maharit. The Maharit lived in Tzvas, the same time as Rav Yosef Karo. Maharit, and he had a son, the Mabit. They didn't always agree with Rav Yosef Karo. So the Maharit has a kula that runs as follows. We have a Machlekes HaRishonim, and the accepted opinion is that a shvuz de shvuz is muta b'makam mitzvah. To ask a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos which is only forbidden mid the Rabbanon. So it's also asa. Shvuz de shvuz is asa. But a shvuz de shvuz b'makam mitzvah is muta. To ask a non-Jew to do an isa which is only asa mid the Rabbanon, and the motivation is in order to enable people to fulfill a mitzvah, this is muta. So the Maharit says, hachazara, to reheat food on Shabbos that's fully cooked, is only an isa de Rabbanon, because menatera in bishalah habishal. So to ask a non-Jew to do hachazor on Shabbos would be considered a shvuz de shvuz, and it's certainly a makam mitzvah to eat hot food on Shabbos as opposed to cold food straight out of the refrigerator. So he says that this would be mutter to use the heter every single Shabbos, to have amir l'nochri every Shabbos to do hachazorah. That's not right. This heter of shvuz de shvuz by makam mitzvah is an emergency measure. If you get stuck, you're not allowed to do it. Let's say, I'm going to rent an apartment on the 50th floor in an apartment building, and I'll rely on the fact that the Goyish elevator man will push the button for me every week. So he's, it's Amir al-Nakhri, so it's only the Rabbanon. And most of the Pesukim hold that using an elevator, even if I use the elevator myself, is only Nisa the Rabbanon. So it's a shvuz du shvuz b'makam mitzvah, to go walk 50 flights. It's a mitzvah of Einik Shabbos, not to walk 50 flights. So, yeah, it's mutter if you get stuck. Once in a while, it's mutter if you get stuck. But it's not mutter to rent an apartment like that, to use this emergency heter week in and week out, every single week. So once in a long while, if you get stuck, that would be mutter. So the Maharit was of the opinion that if you get stuck once in a long while, so you permitted to ask a nochri to reheat the food on Shabbos that was fully cooked from before Shabbos, because ain bishul ha-bishul, and the whole Isav is only hachazor. So the Shari Tshuva writes, when you read the Shulchan Aruch with the Taz and the Magen Avraham, you clearly get the impression that nobody agrees. All of these Ashkenazi poskim do not agree with the Maharit. The question is, why not? That's the Mishnah Berurah quotes that also. It would appear they don't agree with the Maharit. The Mishnah Berurah just says, b'di'eved, if somebody did it, if the goy reheated the food, so you can't say that there's a penalty, b'di'eved, you're not allowed to eat it. You can rely. The Prim Gadim said whenever there's a legitimate opinion that something is mutter, so you can't say that there's a penalty b'di'eved not to eat. So b'di'eved it would be mutter, but the Mishnah Berurah says l'chatchila shouldn't. The question is why not? Why don't they agree with the Mabit? So the Pashtus is that the with the Maharit. So the Pashtus is that the prohibition of hachazore. The Maharit was probably following the opinion, he was a Sephardi. In the 1500s, there were only Sephardishe Rabbanim, and there were no Ashkenazim. So he was following the Rif and the Ramam and all the Sephardishe Poskim, that the Isa HaChazor on Shabbos is an Isa Malocha mid the Rabbanim. So if you ask a non-Jew to do HaChazora, so that lowers the level of the Isa. HaChazora itself is only Malocha mid the Rabbanim, to reheat food is only Bishul mid the Rabbanim. So if I ask a non-Jew to do it, so that's a lower level. It's a shvuz. The shvuz of a makam mitzvah would be muta. But we don't really hold like that. The Ashkenazim don't hold. The Ramah, Paskins, the Maharit was before the Ramah. The Maharit was a contemporary of Rabbi Yosef Karo. He doesn't hold. He probably didn't even have a Ramah. He didn't have a Ramah. So the Ramah doesn't accept that opinion of the Chachmi Svara, that HaChazor is an Isa Bishul Midirabon. It's not a Malach, it's a Gzeira. It's just a Gzeira Shema Yechata. So that's what a lot of times we say, that one can be in violation of a gzeira, even b'shevi al tasa. To do, if you hold, the Maharit is working on the assumption that hachazor is an isa malocha midirabbanon, is bishul midirabbanon, so if I ask a goy to do the hachazorah, it lowers it another level. So it's a shvuz. The shvuz and a makam mitzvah is mutter. But if you hold that hachzara is also because of exera shema yechate, so if the food is being, my food is being replaced on top of the fire on my behalf, so there's a chashash, shema yechate, I will be mechate b'gecholam directly. So the fact that the nochri put it back on top of the fire doesn't lower the level of the issa, it doesn't make it into a shvuz d'shvuz. My food is being returned on top of my fire on my behalf. So the concern is I may poke around in the coals. So that's my direct violation. That's not considered a shvuz d'shvuz. Whenever the issa is a gzera, so then sometimes the gzera can be violated. B'shevi al tasa. My food is being returned on top of the fire. The Magen Avraham quotes this shaila. He quotes that there was some also svardishit poskim hora the Radvaz was of the opinion that if the minhag hamakom is that they always play music at a sheva brachas, so if a couple is having a sheva brachas on Shabbos, you're permitted to have a goyisha orchestra play music for the sheva brachas on Shabbos because it's a shvuz de shvuz b'makom mitzvah. Playing music is only a nisa de rabbanon. Play a piano to play unless you're using some. Mashmiya called is just an Issa Dirabban, Xer Hashem Yisakin Kleshir, unless you're having some electronic and musical instruments, so there may be an additional Issa. But normally playing music is just Xer Dirabban, so to have a non-Jew play with music is a double Dirabban. And since it's a Mokah Mitzvah, because they always have, see, a lot of times by us we have a Shabbat Brachas, but we don't always have music, you see? You can be out to Shabbat Brachas without music. But if the Minhag HaMokah is that they always have music, so then the Radva says it's permissible to hire a non-Jew to play music on Shabbos. That's the shvuz, the shvuz b'makom mitzvah. This was the heter that the Reform introduced, that the Reform relied on to allow non-Jews to play the organ in the synagogue to enhance the prayer services. Originally, they started off with the heter as Amir Liakum, that a non-Jew is going to play the music based on this Magen Avraham quotes from the Tshuvas HaRadvaz. Then once they allowed the playing the organ, so they forgot that it's only permissible if a non-Jew plays it, then they allowed Jews to play it also. Then they allowed Jews to drive to the synagogue. One thing led to the other. But originally the heter started off that the non-Jews played the musical instrument. Now the reason why the heter of the Radvaz was not accepted, al pi pashtus, is because the iser of playing music is not a malocha mid the rabbanon, it's a gzeira shem yisakni pleshir. So if they're playing the music, for whom is the music being played? If they're playing the music for this Jewish family who's having the Sheva Brachas, so if I'm going to hear that it's off key, there's a concern I'm going to walk over and fix the piano. That's the question, Bechlal, whether the Issa Mashmiya call applies today. Who knows how to fix the piano? You have to call an expert. So that's a question. So it's generally assumed that the Gzeira still applies. You're not allowed to play music today, even though there are musical instruments are more complicated than those that they had in the days of the Gemara. So Issa suggests such a possibility, that the musical instruments are more complicated and the layman doesn't know how to fix it, so maybe it's mutter to play music, and we don't accept that.
Except the guitar string is not such a big deal.
Okay.
So a lot of people know how to play guitar.
They know how to fix it. Sure. They know how to fix it, right. So the reason why we don't permit playing music, Alidei Nochri, even though the Magen Avraham calls such an opinion, so the Avnei Nezer explains why, the Eglei Tal explains why, because we assume that playing music is not even a malocha midirabbanon. It's a gzeira shema. So gzeira is possible to violate even mishevi al tasa. If the music is being played for me, so it's the direct chashash, I will go, I may go and fix the musical instrument. So you can't say it's a shvuz de shvuz. The non-Jew is playing the musical instrument. No, the yisir shema, shemi yisakim kleshir, so it's a direct violation on me. The Eglei Tal says the same thing when you get to applying medication. Let's say you're not allowed to apply medication on Shabbos because of the gzeira. The one who's applying medication may do a malach. So the he may grind up some of the vegetables in order to prepare the medication. So the discussion is, what if you have a non-Jewish doctor applying medication to your body? Is that considered a shvuz de shvuz? The non-Jew is doing the medication and applying medication is only nisa de rabbanon. So it's usually assumed, the Eglei Tal says, usually assumed that's not called the shvuz for makom mitzvah. The non-Jew is applying it on my body. So the chashash, since it's being done for me, so the chashash emishachis amon, it applies directly to me. The fact that the nochri is doing it doesn't lower the level of the severity of the issa, that it should be considered a shvuz de shvuz. Okay, so we covered two of the prohibitions with Rabbanim. We covered Shia, we covered Hatzah. We didn't cover Hatmana. Okay, maybe next time we'll do Hatmana. What's the topic for next week?